Hey, Loco sports fans. When you hear Horizon Rehabilitation and Sports Medicine, think advanced, local, and specialized therapy care. The team at Horizon prides themselves on the diversity of their 30-plus specialized treatment programs, including advanced sports medicine and orthopedic care, as they offer the area's only Alter-G treadmill and have an indoor heated resistance therapy pool. For nearly 15 years, Horizon's outpatient, physical, occupational, and sports medicine programs have been addressing the needs of athletes, weekend warriors, and their fans. At any level, at any age or stage, their specialized therapists and athletic trainers are ready to get you back in the game. Visit HorizonRehabilitation.com for more information or call 843-671-REHAB. That's 843-671-REHAB. Horizon Rehabilitation and Sports Medicine, proud sponsors of LocoSports.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Loco Sports Lowdown Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Jarrett, joined as always by Wes Kerr. And unfortunately, Wes, we had to bid adieu to our other co-hosts for the summer. Carlo Peruzza, of course, our intern from Georgia Southern, he is now out of his internship period. And as an international student, he doesn't want to take any risks of being on the show when he's not technically in an internship period. So he'll be back with us in the fall, But it was great to have Carlo for a few weeks, but it's back to the original crew here, Wes. You and me are the OG pod squad, and good to be back with you, and hope you've had a good week since we last talked. What's been going on with you, man?
Well, I've been doing well. Best wishes to Carlo as we get into the summer, and excited to have him back in the fall. But for me, things are going well. I'm looking forward to doing a little more travel around the island. Things begin to reopen in the coming days and the coming weeks, and I think it's really cool. I don't know if you've following all that's been happening with what scientists, what health officials are saying, but people have been saying that exercise actually is a good thing. It's a positive thing to do to kind of help your body stay in shape during these tough times. And it's been said that it had some positive effects against the coronavirus. Now, how true that is, I don't know, but I've heard some things that working out can be good for you. And so I think that's awesome. I mean, I'm really impressed by the amount of people working out and just exercising around the island. And I think whether it's running, biking, or just walking around, people are doing good things with that. They're staying socially distant, which is what you have to do. Social distancing is the key because that's how the virus primarily spreads, is coughing or sneezing, those droplets spreading from person to person. So you got to stay 6 feet apart. I saw there was a new study that showed a positive connection between regular exercise and lower risk of infection. So I think that should be some more motivation for people to find time to get outside and exercise. Since so many more people are working from home, you can't have those excuses like having to be at the office all day. So maybe some time for a lot more people to work out.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I haven't found as much time as I'd like to for that kind of thing, but I've been able to get out for a run every now and then. And actually, my kids and I have started going on an evening bike ride every night after dinner. And, we're out in the new Riverside area. We've got all those trails and we can just hop on the trail and ride up to the high school. And last night we did about 4 miles together. So get out and go for a leisurely ride in the evening, get a little activity. It's the weather's been absolutely phenomenal in the evenings lately. And it's been really nice. And, my wife has started running for the first time during this time. She's used the time she used to use to commute to work in the morning to get out and go for runs and do the Couch to 5K program. And now she's up to running a full 5K. So, which is how I got started too. And I ended up completing a marathon. So I think this is a perfect time for that kind of thing. And I'm glad to see so many people are getting out and getting the physical activity and putting, getting that into their routine as part of their life. And hopefully that will carry on, when this is all over. But I'm with you, Wes. I think anything you can do to get in better physical condition, if you do get sick, that's going to be beneficial to you if you're starting from a healthier position. So great thing to be doing, and I'm with you all the way. Well, let's shift gears into a little bit of breaking news. And once again, it seems like even though this is a slower time, every week we have some breaking news to talk about. And this week we have another new head coach, your Seahawks, Wes. Hilton Head High girls basketball has the replacement for Sean Rochester. And they looked locally here with Russell Ranuszewski, a guy who was an assistant boys coach at May River last year, his first year in the area, but he's got a pretty extensive background as a coach, including head coaching experience. He's going to be the new Seahawk girls coach, and I'm interested to hear, Wes, what you think about this hire. From where I'm sitting, it looks pretty good.
I certainly agree with you. He's got a wealth of experience, both as a player and a coach. He's well-educated on the game. He was a perennial starter at Coker for 3 years and got a master's in coaching education, athlete development from Xavier, so well-schooled on several areas of coaching and a variety of assistant coaching roles as well, including a head coaching stint. And then, as you said, coming across the bridge from May River, and I think that's a plus when you're deciding on who to hire. Already acclimated to the Loco area, I feel like just knowing the schools, knowing the talent around the Loco will give you a leg up when you trying to get that head coaching job. And I think this is a solid hire. I mean, it brings a man who's been through the game, and he's been through it every which way, over 15 years of coaching, whether it's been an assistant or a head coach, and he knows what it takes to create a winning team. I mean, he's willing to work to really take this school to the next level. For Hilton Head, I mean, they have some young talent, and I feel like they could definitely be competitive in the coming years.
Yeah, I agree with you. They do have some young talent. You know, Janiyah Farabee definitely comes to mind. They had a couple of, you know, seventh and eighth graders on playing varsity this year. So Kinsey Eikenberry, one of them. You know, they've got some definite potential coming up through the system, and it looks like they've brought on a guy who has the potential to be a long-term fit, which I think is definitely what they're looking for. When you've started building that feeder system, you want someone who's going to stay for a while and let it develop and come up through the ranks. So this has the potential to work out really well. I did texted with Matt Whitmore a little bit last night, just to talk to him about, you know, his former assistant getting the job. And he was excited for Coach Russ. I think that's what I'm going to call him, because our Coach Russell, I'm going to interview him later on today. And one of the things we have to square away is a nickname, so I don't have to say Russell Ranuszewski every time. But, I think Matt said he's, you know, a great guy and thought it was a great hire for the Seahawks. So hopefully that works out really well, and the Seahawks have a great season next year.
Yeah, I really hope they continue what Sean Rochester started with. I mean, he created a Lowcountry Heat pipeline that really targeted those young players, and now you're really starting to see not only at Hilton Head Island High School, but Hilton Head Christian Academy and other schools as well. And so, as you said, Janiyah Farabee, I was really impressed with her. She could really break out in the next year. Two other girls that I was impressed with were Kenzie Ryan and Anna Genova. Two girls with height. And China Fields, a pretty good shooting guard as well. So I think he will have success combining those skill sets, because I think he got a lot of them with the guard play of Farabee and also with the height of Ryan and Genova. And so I think that puts together a pretty strong roster. So I think most hires are good hires, as you've said before. And yeah. I think Ranuszewski, he really knows what it takes to develop high school athletes. I mean, noted by so much time at different schools, building those squads up. So as a Seahawk homer, which I am, I'm really excited to see what he – and by the way, Hilton Head's doing pretty well in the South Carolina High School League Spirit Tournament. Yeah. They advanced past AC Flora.
Barely. Eked it out, like 50.1 to 49.9 or something like that. Now they're up again in the Sweet 16, I think, against Ridgeview. That's been fun. I've enjoyed it.
But, yeah, I just hope he has to keep building. I think he will to really continue the great foundation that Sean Rochester built, because he did such a great job. That's the key. And I think he'll take the squad even further.
Yeah, I hope so. And that's a great opportunity for him. Great job on pulling up a few more of those names that I was drawing a blank on. I knew they had a lot of young talent. Really just looking to replace Miley Ray was the big piece, which is, you know, not going to be easy to do. But they definitely have the players around her who are ready to take on bigger roles. So that could be exciting. And speaking of hoops, we got a couple of signings to report on. Jasmine Campbell, who, of course, was part of that back-to-back state championship Hilton Head Christian Academy team, signed with Claflin University in Orangeburg. And A.J. Waring from Battery Creek signed with St. Andrews University in Laurinburg, North Carolina. So a couple of kids going the smaller school route. I think both of these kids have the opportunity to succeed at that level. And certainly, you know, I love it anytime a kid wants to play at the next level and they get that opportunity, no matter where it is, that's a blessing and something we should celebrate. So best of luck to them and congratulations as well. Wes, what do you think about these two signings?
Very happy for both of them. Jasmine Campbell, good for her. I got to see her a lot this year on the way to the back-to-back state championship, and she deserves it for sure. I mean, got to see brilliant play down the post. She was dominating at that spot. Got to 1,000 points near the end of her senior season and made some important plays in that state tournament. And, I mean, when she was 1-1, the low block, she's winning that battle down there nearly all the time against skis the competition, and she can make reliable mid-range shot as well. And so I'm excited to see how she performs at the Division II level, where she should be given an early opportunity to show what she's capable of. So I think Jasmine's got a chance to make some big-time contributions to the Lady Panthers of Claflin University in Orangeburg. So staying in South Carolina, we wish Jasmine the best of luck. I think she will thrive in her new home. AJ Waring, Battery Creek, as you said, going to NAIA school, St. Andrews in North Carolina. And AJ is a guy who seemed to always find his name in the score sheet throughout the season. And he was helping CJ Brown really build things up this year early on in the season. A key part of that phenomenal win over Bluffton. And he poured in a nice game to take down one of their rivals, the Beaufort Eagles, later on. He was an excellent leader, I thought, in the senior season. I thought he's going to set the table for some major improvement and success under C.J. Brown. I like where they're headed. Took a couple big steps this year, so I'm interested to see how Battery Creek will keep this up heading into C.J. Brown's next year. And as for Waring, on a nice roster with only two seniors in 2020-21, I think he'll have a chance to make an impact on this team. Randy Hernandez, he's been with the program a while. He grew up in the Bronx, played a bunch of high school ball, travel ball up there, and so he's going to work AJ hard to get most out of him. I think it can go really a long way in your career from these NAIs, and I know he will work the step of his game just like he did at Battery Creek. So congratulations and good luck, AJ.
Yeah, and best of all, get an education while he keeps playing ball. So that's always a great thing for kids from the Loco to, you know, go off and get that opportunity. And speaking of which, we got another one as well, a little bit different, but Dawson Coleman, who we probably talked more about as a basketball player than anything else, but he's been a three-sport star at Buford Academy. He's going to play football, and he's going to play at the Division I level. He's going to take a preferred walk-on opportunity at South Carolina. He was a quarterback, of course, for BA's eight-man team, but they like him as a tight end, wide receiver type. And, you know, it's funny because when Mark Clifford first got that job at BA a couple years ago, he told me straight up, he said, "I got a Division I quarterback, Justin." And I had never even thought of Dawson as a football player at that point. But when Mark Clifford says that, you take notice. And, he's not going up there to play quarterback, but Dawson Coleman's going to be a Gamecock. And I think he's got a chance with his frame and his athleticism. I really like this, using him as a project receiver, tight end type guy, kind of like a Hunter Renfro or something like that. I don't know that he has the speed to really be a wideout, but if he can be more of a tight end split end type, he could be a very interesting football player, to say the least.
And even when he was playing quarterback at Buford Academy, they had him work on his blocking. That's something that he's talked about in the interview, which we'll have shortly here on the podcast. But Dawson Coleman, I really like him as an athletic blocking / catching tight end, because I think he has all of the perfect skills to take on that role. And I think it's amazing how much he's done just a few years at Buford Academy. Really the face of that school, I think, through his time at BA, responsible for three state championships, two soccer, but the most important being their football title back in 2018. And of course, playing eight-man football, that didn't stop Dawson Coleman from earning that preferred walk-on spot. And you know, he pretty much shattered all their pre-existing records and all-purpose yards and points, and stats jump at you. But what I was impressed about most, and his coach Mark Clifford said this, but he was so much raving about his decision-making on the field. I mean, reading defenses like somebody beyond his years. He'll change up the play at the line of scrimmage, and he'll use his legs when he feels inclined to do so. And I think he has pretty much every trait that you could ask for a football player and for a quarterback. And there was a cool story that came out of this. When Coach Clifford was given credit for a key play call that ended up leading to a score, you know, one of the fans asked him, "Hey, that was a great play call. What were your motivation for doing that?" And he said, "Oh no, that was Dawson who called the play." And so, yeah, so Dawson Coleman, that football IQ, that will translate to the wide receiver tight end position. Even though he's not playing quarterback, to have that knowledge will help you on the other side catching the balls from the quarterback. So I think the success he's had at the quarterback position, not just athletically, but also mentally and through his knowledge of the game, that's going to really help him go to the next level and perform well at South Carolina. So, I mean, he's an outstanding leader. He has all the intangibles, I think, to be great, not just in sports, but in life. And I think he's going to knock this chance out of the park at USC as he transitions to a new position. And I'll tell you, his work ethic will be sustained long after he hangs up those cleats. So I have an itching that his drive's going to beat out some others on that South Carolina team. He's going to end up surprising people, I think. We've seen his athleticism on both football, basketball, soccer arenas. So I think there's no way that he can't thrive at the next level. All right, we are now joined by Buford Academy football, basketball, and soccer senior standout, Dawson Coleman. Dawson, congrats on all of your success. And then how are you doing as you finish up your time as a BA Eagle?
Thank you. I don't know. It's been weird end to my high school career, but just looking forward to the future.
So let's start. Tell me when you first got into each of those three sports, and what's the one you enjoyed playing the most?
Basketball has kind of always been my favorite sport for whatever reason. I think it was just what I was best at, or what I thought I was best at anyways. But I didn't even want to play football my sophomore year. And then Coach Clifford called me and convinced me to come to a practice, and that's kind of how it always was with football. And once I knew that once I went to a practice that I wasn't going to be able to walk away. I kind of fell in love with football, not this past season, but the season before. And, I just love the work. And there's just something different about football than any other sport. You've got a bigger team and a bigger family, and you're together more. And I don't know, I think I just really fell in love with that whole family thing with football. And then soccer, I kind of just played it because I thought it was fun.
So what were your goals coming into Buford Academy, and how are you looking to make an impact on the different teams you played for?
Yeah, always wanted to be that guy on the teams, just because I kind of like to lead that way, even if I'm not the best player on that team, like soccer. But I don't know, freshman year basketball, we had an old team, four seniors, and then I was a freshman starting. And I looked up to guys like Luke Harper and Kevin Williams, and you know, I just kind of wanted to be like them when I was a senior. And they were both 1,000-point scorers. And so I just kind of saw myself being like them and leading my team far into the playoffs. And, you know, a championship would have been nice, but I got that with soccer twice and football once, so I can't complain.
No, you can't. Did you play AAU or travel ball in addition to your career at Buford Academy?
Yeah, I played AAU from, I don't remember when I started, really young. And then I think I stopped going in the junior year just because traveling around all summer and I needed to work was kind of a lot. But no, that was fun. I think I talked to my old AAU coach a couple of weeks ago, and I think all the starters are going to play college football, which is kind of cool.
Awesome.
I played with Stone, sure, you know, Stone McDonald. Stonehead Prep, yep. Lee Kirkland, Shamar Sandgren, I think he plays football in Savannah, and yeah, just all of us turned out to be great athletes.
So Dawson, what an outstanding football career you had at Buford Academy, and of course you had success as the all-time leader in both points and all-purpose yards, but your intangibles may have even been better. You were really praised for your football knowledge and your IQ as a quarterback. So what were the keys to developing those mental capabilities to really read defenses, become an even better quarterback?
I think we just repped it probably way too much because we had to get the reads right. But we just drilled it over and over. And then once we got into the games, you know, if I saw something I didn't like, Coach Clifford just put the trust in me to check down and change the play at the line. And then, you know, sometimes I was right, I guess.
That's awesome. Take me through that thought process when you come up to the line of scrimmage. What are you eyeing and paying attention to the most before the snap, and how does that help affect your decision-making?
You know, a lot of times the left and right side of the defensive line are kind of staggered in a different way. So if you've got a guard in the A-gap or a guard in the B-gap on the left side, you know, you can just change the run play depending on what hole the running back's supposed to run into. And then sometimes if I didn't like any of that, I would just not tell anybody and I would fake the handoff and run a bootleg around the end.
Well, speaking of that, I want to know how much you use your running capabilities as a quarterback and what was your philosophy on when to decide to scramble during a play, and did coach design quarterback runs for you to really even further mix up that play calling?
Yeah, well, my junior year was his first year at BA, so the first few games we were kind of just learning the offense and getting everything going. But then once we got to the playoffs, there were a lot more run plays designed, which definitely helped us. And then, you know, because we just made those plays for the playoffs, and none of the teams really expected that. So I think that helped us a lot. But as far as like a pass play, I'm most likely going to throw it, just because I feel confident in my receivers and my arm. But definitely if he's double covered, if I feel pressure, I'll take off for sure.
Well, you won a state championship in football in 2018. What was the feeling like of winning that title, and what was the key area of preparation and your work over that season to put you over the top?
Yeah, Coach did a really good job of preparing us for that game from the beginning of the season. You know, he definitely saw something in us that we didn't know we were capable of. And we knew we were going to play Andrew Jackson in the final no matter what, because they had been there for so many years and won it 3 times in a row. So they hadn't lost a game in 40-something games. So I think that we were all mentally prepared, and they beat us earlier in the season and we knew we could beat them, and it was just all a mental thing. And once that game kicked off, we knew we were going to beat them. It was the best feeling.
So you will be walking on to the South Carolina Gamecocks to play wide receiver tight end. What does this accomplishment reflect in you the most?
Oh man. Coach told me in the middle of junior year that season, he was like, told me that South Carolina's been calling, and I was like, no way. He told me to go to their camp this summer, and I was like, that'd be fun. So you get there and you do all your agility drills, and they time you for all those things, and then we're about to start the throwing drills, and Muschamp called me over and offered me a spot at tight end, and I was just freaking out. I just think that shows that I'm a focused guy and I work hard at everything I do. You know, even if football wasn't my favorite sport, you know, I definitely worked just as hard and wanted to be the best player that I could be. And now, it probably is my favorite sport.
So how will you translate your skills from quarterback to your new position? And we know you have the capability to shine as a wideout, but how have you improved your blocking to perform that job as a tight end?
Yeah, coach has always made every single one of us block in practice. So I'm not too worried about that, because I've been doing it with my O-line and all that all year since 10th grade. So I think that'll help me a lot. And then I'm probably just going to get bigger and stronger and faster, and I'm really excited.
How has Coach Clifford grown you as both an athlete and a person throughout your time at BA?
Oh, there's just countless amount of stories he'd tell you, and somehow he'd bring it around to character development. And I took his physical conditioning class, but like a week into that class, he changed it to physical and mental conditioning class, because he'd sit us down in his classroom for half the class and talk to us about character and all that, all those great things. And you know, just watching him, he's, you know, if someone tells you to do something, you got to do it, and you got to do it the best way you can. And he's just a great guy to look up to, and kind of mold your character into his.
So we haven't even talked about the outstanding basketball season that you had this year at BA, and you were a scoring machine. What were areas that might help you grow your football career, especially because of how much I've seen basketball skills, people who've played basketball have really shined at the wide receiver tight end position.
Yeah. You know, we some of our big wins are probably my favorite memories. You know, we beat Bethesda at home on senior night, and they were the number one team in the 2A region, which was a big upset. And then we beat Andrew Jackson in double overtime at home on a Saturday. So that was great. And, yeah, I think that hand-eye coordination and definitely the quick bursts and jumping a lot in basketball really translates.
You also won two state championships in soccer. What position did you play on the pitch, and what did you take away from that experience and your camaraderie with your teammates?
Yeah, so I played center defensive mid, so it's kind of like a center back, but I got to attack a little bit. And there's something about soccer that you just don't have in any other sport. You just, I don't know, I don't really know how to explain it. It's just, I think it's because I'm not the best at it. I'm just like fast and big, and I don't know, I can just find my way to take the ball from other people. But I don't know, I think that's just so fun. And as far as that camaraderie, you know, when you're in middle school and you're playing with all your friends, it's one thing, but then you watch your high school team play and they're winning a state championship every year, and then all of a sudden they graduate, and here we are, a bunch of sophomores, and we find a way to win, and I think that really just brought us together.
Absolutely. During soccer season, you weren't the number one starring role like you were on the football field and the basketball court, so being kind of in some ways subordinate to other players on the soccer field, did that help you at all when you went back to playing football and basketball as kind of the leading role on that team?
Yeah, I kind of can learn how I take leadership, and then help me lead better by like pretending that I was leading for myself, if that makes any sense. But you know, like I kind of felt like a student to them, and you know, when you're in the middle of the game, they're scream and make a run or whatever, and you know, you listen, pay attention, you're like, oh, that worked, and then you kind of can use that in your own way and help your own leadership, because you know, that's the last sport of the season, so you know, I'm used to bossing everyone around for 8 months prior to that or whatever, but you know, it's just kind of nice to, for one.
So you've always had such a drive to win no matter what sport you're playing. And how's that drive to accomplish a task at hand and the whole win at all cost mentality helped you to where you are now? And do you think that your competitiveness has had a great effect of your teammates too?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I remember kickball and PE when I was younger. I hated losing, and I was always that guy. But definitely as I got older, matured my emotions, and you know, I think when you're down or whatever, even in soccer, if I'm not the best player, but when you see somebody working twice as hard with a minute left, and you know, they just don't want to lose, you know, I think I had another gear that I didn't even know about.
So during this pandemic, how are you trying to stay fit and work out?
I've been going over to BA and using that gym as much as I can. And Coach Clifford's got some agility ladders laid out and all that good stuff. So I've got a gym. I've been going quite a bit and eating a lot of food.
Well, you won three state championships. Which one of those three was the most meaningful for you?
By far the football one. First one the school had ever won. I think it was the first time we made it to the playoffs. Just the year before then, crazy. Or the first time we won a playoff game, excuse me. And then, Yeah, by far football, just because of that family thing and Coach Clifford's first year, and the whole student body was behind us. And, you know, it was just a great feeling because soccer, you know, it's kind of like a tradition to win a state championship. And when you don't, kind of like, you know, you kind of like frowned upon or looked at weird. But football for sure was the most meaningful. I think anyone at BA would agree with that.
Well, you've done so many great things for the Buford Academy athletic program. What do you feel is the legacy you will leave as the face for so many years at BA?
Yeah, I hope that, you know, the lower classmen can just learn from what I've done and try to do it better. You know, we've got a good bunch of athletes there at BA, and I just hope they can continue to win.
So you're on your way to South Carolina. What is Will Muschamp expecting of you to contribute to this Gamecock team?
Yeah, well, he's going to get a lot of hard work, and it's going to take me a second to learn everything and get used to 11-man football. I haven't played it since I was a kid, but yeah, I'm just going to work hard and try to be the best I can be.
And finally, Dawson, what do you want to get out of college, and what are your career goals after graduation?
Yeah, well, obviously education is the most important thing, and playing football, you know, I'm going to be really busy, but I've got mandatory study halls and I have all the advisors I need and all the tutors, so I'm really looking forward to that. Hopefully my grades will be pretty good, and yeah, I'm going into business management, but I could see myself going into finance later on. I just wanted to go into a broad thing, so I could change my mind if I wanted to, but I'm planning on going into finance, and we'll see where that takes me.
Well, Dawson, thank you so much for joining us today, and we wish you the best of luck as a Gamecock in the years to come.
Thank you so much.
Great to hear from Dawson Coleman, who has been a kid that I've really enjoyed covering these past few years. And, you know, he already was a basketball star when he took over that football team and led them to the state championship, and really came into his own, I think, as a leader in that role. And, you know, Coach Clifford obviously has been a big influence on him. I really am excited to see how he does at South Carolina. You know, no matter what, he's getting a great education, and he's going to learn a lot from the process and the experience. But I do think, you know, that they'll put some weight on him. He's got a great frame. He's got an athleticism that is rare to find. You look at all the college basketball players that have been converted to NFL tight ends and the success they've had. And you know, when you think of him in that mold, it's really interesting. And I'll be interested to see, you know, how he pans out at South Carolina. But regardless, we'll be keeping an eye on and rooting for him all the way. Great kid all the way. And, you know, maybe it turns out like our next guest, Terrence Ash, who was a walk-on at Clemson and ended up earning a scholarship and playing his full career there. And now he's the new football coach at Battery Creek High School. And we talked at some length last week, Wes, about this hire, which we both really like. But I was able to talk a little bit more with Terrence just about, you know, what brought him down to the Low Country, what attracted him to this Battery Creek job, and you know, how he feels about how things are going there, and that they've got the right leadership in place from the top down. And I have to agree, I'm really excited to see what he can do with that program.
For sure. You know, I was listening to the interview, and I was really impressed by his determination to turn around Battery Creek. Obviously, it can be done. It's very difficult, but the challenges that he went through at Clemson, walking onto that team, gained a scholarship, actually starting an ACC championship game, doing that from where he started was no easy task at all. So I think he's going to handle this difficult job, and I think he's going to do some outstanding things at Battery Creek.
All right, we're joined now on the Loco Sports Lowdown podcast by new Battery Creek High School football coach Terrence Ash, coming across town from Buford High. Terrence, getting to stay close to your new home and take your first head coaching job. I know it's an exciting time for you, even in this unusual time. Thanks so much for making time to come on the podcast.
Justin, thank you for having me. Definitely blessed for the opportunity and excited to hopefully soon be able to get around the kids and get this thing going.
Yeah, obviously you're familiar with the situation at Battery Creek. Having been at Buford even for only a year, you know, you've been able to see the program up close this past year. It's a program that has
has traditionally struggled. They haven't won a lot of games lately, but certainly there's a good athletic pedigree there. And I know you're excited about the opportunity to get in there and try to get that program back on steadier ground. What was it about this job that made it so exciting for you at this time?
They have the athletes there. That's not a question. Just with it being close, I know me and my wife, we weren't looking to move. So it kind of, with it being just in our backyard, and the opportunity to be a football head coach was definitely something, all the pieces kind of fell together. And it's one of those things that I felt like it was going to be a great opportunity for me and my family.
Yeah, I'm sure after your first year here in the Lowcountry, you fell in love. We all do. It's a really hard place to leave. So when you get that opportunity right here, I definitely understand, why you would be excited. What brought you down to Buford? I know you and Coach Lavrin both went to Clemson, but what was it that got you down here to work with him?
Me and my wife, we were kind of looking for a change of scenery. It was one of those things. She wanted to get close to the water, and I knew Bryce got the head coaching job at Buford, so I reached out to him. We had plenty of conversations, and I thought it was a great opportunity to be a part of his staff. We had already had a relationship at Clemson. We also would go out to Alabama at the time where high school coaches could work camp. So we went out there when Billy Napier was part of the Alabama program. So those were 2 years that we spent time working together at camps. So it was, again, when I saw that he got the head coaching job down here at Buford, I reached out to him. And I know he was trying to build a good staff and guys that he knew and that guys that he could trust. We were able to get everything worked out. My wife was able to get a job. I was able to get a job at the elementary. So, again, those everything kind of fell into place and worked out. And, of course, it was a great opportunity. And, I thank him much for allowing me to be a part of his program.
Yeah, you love it when a plan works out, right? And it's fallen into place again for you here. That puts you in a position where you maybe had a little more familiarity and gave you an opportunity to maybe have a leg up on this Battery Creek job. Going in there, having you come in and you learn a new system, you work for Bryce and had some success at offense in particular, had some real success late in the season. And now you start over at Battery Creek. What did you maybe learn from this past year that you can take with you into your new job and maybe help you get that foundation under you a little bit quicker?
The biggest thing was Bryce wanted the players to understand that it was all about earning it, that nothing was going to be given to you. And I think we stood by that, holding the players accountable, both on the field and also in the classroom and also out in the community. We didn't have success early on in the season. And then right before we got into region play, we lost our starting quarterback in Tyler. We definitely had to get very creative. Logan, which was the other offensive coordinator, we worked very close together. And then, of course, Bryce, us three kind of putting our heads together and coming up with a good scheme. And I think there's certain things that I'll be able to take what we did, especially late in the season, and take it over here to Battery Creek. I've been a part of a number of different offenses. Before I came down here, I was with the Blair Harden at River Bluff for 2 years there, where we ended up having the triple option out of the gun. And then before that, we kind of had a inside zone scheme. And then a little bit before that, it was kind of a gap scheme. So being familiar with a lot of different offenses will allow me to, really evaluate our personnel and be able to, use athletes here at Battery Creek and get the playmakers the ball and be creative where it's not easy to game plan against.
Yeah, I loved what you guys did with the offense in the second half of the season with Daniel running the option. That was pretty phenomenal how you guys were able to transition so seamlessly I like that you say that you'll fit your scheme to your personnel. Is that just something philosophically that you believe that you can't, you know, force a square peg into a round hole, that you have to, you know, kind of adjust to what you've got?
Truly believe it. Again, with being around different systems, it's going to allow me to, you know, not be, you know, too difficult as far as, you know, having our players learn a lot, but seeing what they can learn. And again, you know, something I learned when I was playing at Clemson and something that I've done over my coaching career is charting touches. You know, especially the guys that we identify that can really change the ball game, and seeing how many touches they're getting. That's one thing that I've learned, just making sure, because at the end of the day, you know, win, lose, or draw is, did we give our offense, did we give our team an opportunity to be successful? And I think that goes back to finding ways to get the ball in your best athlete's hands.
Now, obviously a big part of building a successful high school program is building that coaching staff. Are you going to have the flexibility to be able to bring in some of your guys or go out and bring in some people who you're familiar with, or, you know, what's the situation going to be for you there at Creek?
Well, with everything going on with COVID-19, it's kind of been a challenge, you know, and then of course with the hire, you know, it being so late, you know, when you're talking about especially high school ball, you got teacher contracts. So it's not easy to say, hey, I want that guy, and being able to get that guy in. That was one thing during the interview process and talking with Sarah Hayes and Mr. Cox. That was one thing they told me, that we're going to support you. You know, we know that you may want to bring guys in, and you know, we're going to support you as much as possible. So just knowing that, it, you know, has allowed me to, you know, again, be able to try to get the right guys around. And like I told them, you know, and like I told the staff, because I called every member of the staff last year, you know, I wanted them to understand that, hey, I'm not coming in this job to fire everybody that's on that staff. You know, we had a lot of conversations. Of course, we couldn't really have anything in person. But, you know, I've been around technology. So, you know, that's kind of helped me, and, you know, just being able to use Zoom and really talk to coaches. And haven't completed the staff, but I think we're headed in the right direction, and you know, we hopefully soon we can get this thing rolling.
Outstanding. Yeah, it's a program that's kind of been on the cusp here the past few years. You know, Coach Wilson had a really good first year you know, just kind of couldn't maintain the momentum those past couple of years, but they've had some level of success, and they certainly, you know, have some pieces there. And you know that they had a good coach before who was building the foundation the right way. Do you feel pretty confident that you can go in there and you know, maybe have some success right away?
I do. You know, it's definitely not going to happen overnight. But I do think, you know, they did some really good things. I know he was big with having the FCA involved. You know, we'll continue to do that. And really, you know, growing off of what they've done in the community. That's one thing. I want our guys to give back to the community. We're going to have a lot of things in place for that. You know, having the community come out, having events where our players go out, you know, whether it's to Beaufort Elementary where I worked at and doing some read-alouds, opening car doors, visiting the middle schools. So, you know, the one thing I told the players when we had a team meeting the other week is that, hey, it's not just going to be about football. And I think Coach Wilson did a great job with that. You know, I have a couple of ideas that I want to bring to add on top of what they've already done. But, you know, just not being a football player, but also being a good student and just being a good citizen. And doing the right thing. I told them, hey, we're going to do it the right way. And, you know, that's going to be not just on the football field, but in the classroom with being respectful to the teachers and also giving back to the community and serving this community.
Yeah, as you and I have talked about before, it's got the potential to be a really important, rewarding job for someone who does it with the right motives in mind, and you can really make a difference in a lot of kids' lives there. So it sounds like you're on the right track as far as that goes. I want to talk to you a little bit about your time at Clemson, because I think that speaks a lot to you as a person, as a coach, just kind of the person you are. You went to Clemson as a walk-on, just like your older brother did, and ended up earning a scholarship and contributing right away. But I think it's interesting that you ended up with quite a few more tackles than you did receptions as a wide receiver. And in your bio talks a lot about your blocking. What does that say about you and the person that you are, you know, still to this day, that it seems like you are always an unselfish team player type guy?
Well, I understood that everybody has a role, you know, whether it's on the football team, you know, whatever you decide to do career-wise, everybody can't be the top dog. I played with a lot of great athletes, you know, C.J. Spiller, Aaron Kelly, James Davis. So I knew that for me to make an impact, it was going to be me binding to my role, binding to special teams. I knew that that was going to be a way for me to get on the travel roster and to be able to earn a scholarship and just, you know, hey, if it's blocking, if that's what they need me to do, that's what I'm going to do. You know, I can remember being in my college dorm, and the biggest thing Coach Swinney told me when he was my receiving coach is you got to know the formations. So I remember taking all the formations and posting them right beside my bed and learning those formations, and also not saying that, hey, I'm just an A, or, hey, I'm just going to play Z. But I took the time and really invested into learning every single position in the wide out. And I think it helped me understand the game and the scheme that our offense was trying to do. And I knew that, you know, hey, if I can block, and when I had the opportunity to catch the football, make plays, and also contribute on special teams, that, hey, I could put myself in a position to not only earn a scholarship, but to also be a starter. Because I just didn't want to go to Clemson and say, hey, I played ball at Clemson, but I wanted to say, hey, not only did I go to Clemson, and not only did I earn a scholarship, I also contribute, and I also made an impact.
And you started an ACC championship game. That's no joke. What a great experience, yeah, for you to be able to have that. And, you know, you mentioned Coach Sweeney, and I think everybody who plays for him or comes into contact with him has wonderful things to say. What an impact, what kind of an impact did he make on you?
Great guy. I guess, you know, a lot of people say, hey, when they get in front of the media, they're one way. When they're behind closed doors, they're another way. He's true to what he says, both behind closed doors and out into the media. So I was able to learn a lot that, hey, you got to be a man of your word. And that's one thing that I was able to learn from him. And he was definitely, you know, besides being a football player, he was all about you becoming a better person. And my mom loved him. You know, he's always talking, you know, when my mom was coming to the hotel before games, especially, you know, if we're doing bowl week, and just to see that he truly values family has taught me a lot and has helped me, you know, understanding the value of family and developing the person more than the player. Because if you can develop the person, then you can also develop the player.
Absolutely. You mentioned your softball coaching experience. You've also coached track and field. Do you expect to be involved in some other programs at Battery Creek outside of the football program?
Whatever I can do, not only to make the football program better, but also the athletic department better and the school better, I'm willing to do. I'm working on my sports management. You know, sometime down the road, you know, the potential, if it opens, to be an athletic director. But, you know, wherever they need me, wherever I can help most, that's what I'm willing to do.
And it seems like that's kind of the growing consensus at Battery Creek, where you've got some really good people in charge there. I'm a big fan of Chad Cox and Sarah Hayes, both of whom you mentioned. I think they're doing good things and have that school on the right track. How much did that go into, you know, your excitement about this job and then your decision ultimately to make this your first stop as a head football coach?
Just their vision, what they wanted for, you know, the entire school. Not just the athletic program, of course, that played a major role in it, but just their vision and how passionate they were about Battery Creek and just their energy. They're very energetic and willing to do what's best for the kids. So I thought it was a great fit and that we, their beliefs and my beliefs and everything aligned. And I thought it would be a great relationship to be able to work with them. And then I know after being hired and after talking to Chad, Mr. Cox a lot, I actually found out that we knew a lot more people all the world that I definitely didn't know before. And then I ended up finding out again, it kind of everything just fell together. I was like, yes, it ended up kind of being a no-brainer. That this was a great opportunity to work with some great people and also have an opportunity to, you know, get Creek back on the ride.
Outstanding. Well, hey, that's all I got for you today, Coach. Appreciate you so much joining us on the podcast and really look forward to working with you and seeing what you can do over at Battery Creek.
Thank you for the opportunity, Justin, and go Creek.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. We'll be right back with more on the Loco Sports Lowdown Podcast.
All right. Great to talk with Coach T.A. and get to know him a little bit better. Really looking forward to working with him, hopefully in the fall, if all goes well. We'll be back out there playing football. And we got a couple more things we wanted to chat about that came up across social media or out in the actual media this week before we wrap things up. First of all, Wes, this one came up on Twitter, and I think it's an interesting thought. As we start to watch sports come back, you know, of course, we're without spectators with the Asian baseball leagues we've talked about, with the European soccer leagues, and now, you know, with the PGA Tour about to start up, it's going to be the same situation. So we have a little bit of experience with this of experiencing sports without fans. But one aspect we haven't really talked that much about is what does that mean to the players? Is there any advantage now to being the home team if you don't have your home crowd there? And it's an interesting discussion that we got into on Twitter, but I'm interested to hear your thoughts. I didn't see you chime in on Twitter. You must have saved all your great takes for the podcast. So what do you think, Wes? What's it mean now to be the home team if there's no home crowd?
I guess it really depends on how much travel's done. If they're staying in the hubs, like what is being discussed in several leagues in North America, I think that's going to take away much of the home field advantage one would have if the travel's cut down. And also, not every home field advantage is created equal for a certain team or for a certain player. Some players can thrive, can improve their game with the home fans backing behind them. Some players, it really doesn't matter that much. Some players can't do well at home. It depends on player to player. And I think that, like, in the NFL, you know, playing in Seattle, Kansas City, I think that's historically been tougher than playing in other cities like Jacksonville and Carolina, just because those fans have done a better job of creating distractors and maybe bigger fan bases and just that kind of thing. But really the only variables without fans would be travel and maybe the mental side of the game for certain players who are accustomed to playing, especially in baseball. It could take a while to get used to be playing left field in Fenway Park, for example. I mean, yeah. Different ballparks present challenges. And when you're at your home ballpark, it's a lot easier to kind of know what you expect. But when you're playing another area, that could affect you. So maybe in that sense, you can still have, but I feel like it could be, I feel like really it varies from player to player. It's not just like this one thing where, okay, this team has home field advantage, this team, like if you're at home, you have this amount of home field advantage because it's so different compared to different teams and different players. So it's not created equal. It still exists, but slightly, but I think other variables will still be affecting things depending on how much travel they do and how the players feel going into the game.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, baseball is the one sport where you feel like there still would be a home field advantage for a couple of reasons. I mean, one is just the rules are different such that the home team bats last. So that's an advantage that's baked in. And then you do have the different dimensions, you know, not necessarily the same dimensions in every park. So there are some advantages to learning how to play angles and things like that. Fenway being the greatest example, but there are lots of them. And then you also have teams that are sometimes built for their ballpark. You know, like you think of, I think of the Royals and Cardinals teams of the 80s that were just built for speed, and they wanted to, you know, they played on artificial turf and they wanted to smack it in the gap and dig out doubles and triples. So you can build your team to your ballpark a little bit. So I think baseball is where you would still have the most, but then ironically, you know, baseball is probably the sport where the crowd influences the least on a home field advantage, except when you get into the playoffs. You know, during the regular season, you just don't get that intensely into it. So it kind of flips things on its head there. And then some of the coaches were talking on Twitter that there are other ways you can create home field advantages by, you know, making sure that the turf is a little soggy when you're playing a fast team, or other things that you can do to try to accentuate your strengths and you know, play against your opponent's weaknesses or downplay their strengths. So I think there will still be some ways to influence that, but certainly it's minimalized. As a spectator watching on TV, I have to say that I thought it would be really strange to watch baseball without fans, but it hasn't impacted my viewing experience that much. I think you get adjusted to it pretty quickly, just the absence of the ambient noise. And they still have a lot of the stadium sound effects and music and stuff. So it really hasn't been as much of a distraction as I thought it would be, and has not at all impacted my ability to enjoy the experience. So yeah. I'm curious what you think about that.
Yeah, I think they're still going to have a lot of features that make games at ballparks what it is. I think they'll still have their walk-up songs when they come up to bat. I still think they'll have just ambient music going on during games, going on in several different sports, whether it's baseball, basketball, hockey, football. And so I think that the fan experience is going to be like it is normally, but they're going to be there and be watching on TV. And I think Fox Sports has talked about putting in crowd noise on their broadcast just to kind of make it seem like you're watching in the actual game. And you look at Korea, what's happened there. They've had they put in fans. they put in some like designs, graphics of fans. And then I feel like if we ever get the technology and we're still in this, we'll probably end up putting like having holograms of fans, or maybe some kind of virtual reality system where you could actually they show a picture of you watching the game or something like that. If this becomes like a 100-year apocalypse where we just have to deal with this forever, and eventually we just have a situation where we're always just playing with no fans. But yeah, I think people are going to do, leagues are going to try to do the best they can to make the experience as genuine as possible, trying to make it so like you're actually at the game. And so I think what they might choose, maybe they'll try to do several different mechanisms. Maybe now I thought about maybe miking up the players, but then you get into the ideas of players putting some bombs up on the TV. And so you don't want to hear players cursing on television. So, but I'm sure they'll find ways to entertain the fans despite them not coming to games. So I feel like, and there's been surveys that have come up that Americans, there's a good percentage of Americans still wouldn't mind seeing sports on, even if it was without fans. So I feel like that's going to be the normal for, in my average case estimate, a couple of years. Could be less than that, could be more than that. But it's going to take a while for to come into a stadium and then have full capacity. It's going to take a while, in my opinion. So I think it's going to be a new normal when it comes to the world as a whole, but also sports, how you watch games, how you listen to games, how you come to games.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds. And, it, you know, along the same lines, you know, we were also going to discuss the PGA Tour's plans for the testing and how much they're going to lock down the sites for the tournaments, which, of course, has local implications because of the RBC Heritage is scheduled to be played in June under these guidelines. And the PGA Tour has not released the full guidelines yet, but there's been some reporting on what is included. And it is very stringent. You know, we're talking about every day people being tested, having their temperature taken. Players and caddies are even going to be distancing. The players will be asked to retrieve their own, you know, get their own clubs in and out of the bag. The caddies will carry the bags. They'll rake the bunkers. but really they're not going to be able to do as much as they normally do either. Players will get the ball out of the hole, and they're going to have to wipe down the flag sticks, you know, after every time someone touches it. This is going to be very intense and labor intensive and expensive. And so, you know, when you look at the measures that they're taking just to come back to playing without spectators, it really does kind of put into perspective how far away we may be from quote unquote normal. And we just need to be cautious with how we do return to this and not get ahead of ourselves by seeing that they're going to play the Heritage in a month. That doesn't mean that we should be going out and doing everything at that point, because they're taking a ton of precautions and we're not at a position where the local rec league can take that level of precaution. So, it's apples and oranges, and we can't fool ourselves into thinking because they're doing it, everyone else is ready to do that either. So it's going to be very interesting to see people tiptoe back into this and what works and what doesn't, and try to piece together how we start to not get back to normal, but develop our new normal and get back to our normal activities in a way that is safe in the current environment. So, I'm really blown away by how intense the PGA Tour guidelines are. Did you take a look at those, Wes? And I wonder what your thoughts are as far as the precautions they're taking.
You know, I think it's necessary to take as many precautions as you can. They need to think hard about how they can test players, because I think they're the guinea pigs on this side of the world. If they can do it right, maybe that can shed some confidence onto the big four leagues to take on their example, especially for golf, because they're traveling. They're not playing the same venue every week. I mean, we've been talking about baseball just playing one spot, other sports, just like NBA having their playoffs in Las Vegas. That's just in one venue. PGA Tour is trying to do it so that you go to a different course in America, North America, every week. So that makes it critical that when these players travel from location to location, you got to do the best job you can testing them right away. And this testing is going to have to include routine temperature checks before each round. In addition, the traditional COVID-19 testing, I'm sure, as the players enter what you would call a bubble, because they you're trying to not get any infections, any sign of the virus in this bubble. And until this virus is contained, I mean, it's going to be a while, even if we have a vaccine, whether or not it's effective, whether or not we could roll it out. And so the virus will be present for a long time, and it's definitely going to be the new normal in our society, that when you go somewhere to a public venue, to a public gathering, if you show signs of fever or some other signs of COVID-19, you're not going to be allowed in the bubble. So that's just the way it's going to be. You have to make sure that you are showing no symptoms, because it all takes is one person to start a big chain reaction. Next thing you know, 1,500 people are infected, and now you're in big trouble. So make sure nothing's brought to the golf area. That's so important. It's the chance to get the ball rolling again. And really, if this goes well, this would be a great sign for the other sports, that they could continue what the PGA Tour has done and start up themselves. And so the tests, I think they'll have to be done in a regular schedule for each player. They'll have to be given the materials. Obviously, that's the problem, is hopefully they've got have to have enough materials. And that's one of the issues that we've been talking about, the news has been talking about for a while, is how can we get enough testing materials to the places where there needs to be testing? And that is the key, as Dr. Fauci and others have said, to reopen America. There's got to be a way to find enough testing materials, whatever it takes to make the tests, whatever it takes to process the tests. And there needs to be a way to do it as quickly as you can. And so if you could get results in as minimal time as possible, that's going to make it really easy to detect who has the virus, who doesn't have the virus, and who needs to isolate, self-quarantine or whatever, in order to separate yourself and not spread the virus. And so it's going to be a challenge. It's probably one of the biggest challenges we're going to have to face in history, for not just our country, for our world. And we have to make sure sports is a very important institution in our lives. And so we need to make sure that, because we really need to get back to sports. A lot of people are they've had dreams to improve their game to compete at the highest level, and I just don't see sports going away. You're going to have to find a way to do it safely. You're going to need everything you can to keep players, officials, and everyone involved safe.
Yep, and if we rush back too quickly and don't do it the right way, it's going to be a lot longer before we get to try again. That's the important thing here. We have to make sure that that we get it right and have the right precautions in place when we do it, because if we fail, then you know it's going to set us back to square one. So hopefully the PGA Tour and their very robust set of guidelines that they have is and limitations, you know, they're not even letting the players' families come to the venue. You know, they're taking very strict measures to make sure that this is done safely. So hopefully they will succeed, and then we'll be able to take the next step, you know, where we open it up a little bit more. And you know, it's just going to be a process of step-by-step process, kind of like an elimination diet, you know, where you just eliminate everything and you slowly introduce things back and see what works and what doesn't. And that's what we're going to have to do. So hopefully all goes well with the Heritage, the PGA Tour, and we start to tiptoe back toward normalcy in the sports world. Thanks so much for joining us for another edition of the Loco Sports Lowdown podcast. Until next time, go Loco.